From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, April 26th, 2011. Each week this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
Last week, among the requisite location privacy scares, announcement of new features available in mapping apps, and newly opened datasets at Aware 2.0, came geo-announcements from tech giants Google and Microsoft. Google announced Google Earth Builder, a hosted platform that allows government and industry players to use some of the same tools Google does to publish their data for use in Google Earth and Google Maps. Microsoft announced the Read-Write World project, a flexible fabric for exposing, connecting, and consuming geomedia and geodata. Our goal this week? To explain what problems these offerings solve and the role they may play for current users of GIS and mapping solutions. Now, it was actually Dylan Lorimar, Google Earth's product manager, who gave the demo of Google Earth Builder in conjunction with Marissa Meyer's keynote at Aware 2.0. So if folks want to get a real sense of what that product is, I want to point them to that video, because I think a lot of the coverage from the media about Google Earth Builder didn't, for me, convey exactly what it was and what it was for. So if you look through that video, what you learn is that Google has about 25,000 paying enterprise customers for Google Earth, and they've acquired those over the last 7 years or so that product has been out. And if you want to contrast that, ESRI claims 350,000 enterprise customers. Now, the argument from Lorimar is that working with geospatial data is hard, it has weird formats, and he maintains that Google's users came to Google and said, we want to use the same processing tools and publishing tools that you use. Thus was the impetus to put together Google Earth Builder. And it really has sort of three functions. You can upload data to it, you can manage data in it, and then you can publish that data out for access in Google Maps, Google Earth, or via standards like WMS. Now, the interesting part of that for me isn't the upload and the publish. I think we have a sense of those. It's that middle part, which is manage. And if you expand that term manage, it means to Google, store, process, and style. And store, I think we know, that's put it up in the cloud. Style, we know, is symbolize it, put together a choropleth map, that sort of thing. The interesting part in the middle is process. Processing that is available, as I understand it, is really merging different files together. If you've got imagery, making sure that it matches up and that it's consistent. There was a function called feathering that was mentioned. I'm not even sure what these things are, but to me they're sort of pre-processing, putting the data together kind of tools. And interestingly, that's the part we don't get to see. In the demo, we see an awful lot of the manage, the catalog. When you upload the data, it grabs all the metadata and puts together a catalog which looks an awful lot like ArcGIS's catalog. And we see some of the output from the styling, so we see some choropleth maps. But what goes on in the middle to sort of massage that data, we don't get to see. The other key highlights of Google Earth Builder are that the sharing is very much like Google Docs. You assign people who you want to have access to the data sets. You give them access, and then when they log into Google Earth, they have access to that data. And because this is a Google web sort of property, you get all kinds of metrics of who's looking at your data. So with that as a brief introduction of what Google Earth Builder is, let me put this to you, Joe. What problem does this offering solve?
Well, I want to look at this from a percentages or usage basis. I think they've solved the 80% solution. If you look at how much functionality is actually used by any individual user at any one time using a desktop geospatial product, we probably use, what's your guess, 20% of the functionality of a desktop product.
Right. Well, and that's been the magic number for Word and AutoCAD
exactly.
And everything else for years, so sure.
And how often is it that functionality is used when solving a problem? Again, that magic number is probably 80% of the time. So you're using 20% of the functionality 80% of the time. So to me, Google Earth Builder is attempting to address the 80-20 problem. 80% of the time you'll use 20% of the product. So why not supply the user with 100% of the functionality that they'll use 100% of the time? And they'll do this through some cloud storage as well. They'll throw that in. So the problem that they're trying to get, and I think, as I said in my take on the blog, is although it's clunky in some ways, they're trying to address this enterprise user with most of the functionality that you'd use most of the time.
Which is what exactly?
Management, metadata management, merging of different data sets, storing your data. It's all of that data Q&A that is a big problem for many people. And really all they want to do at the end of the day is, let's do some thematic mapping, as you alluded to. Let's do some styling. Let's put it out there where people can share. Having the Google Docs type style sharing is very nice. It's what they're trying to solve. Now, whether they've done it well is a different question, but that's what they're trying to solve in my mind.
I would tend to agree. This is sort of the, how do I publish my data to my enterprise users with an easy-to-use client interface?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, with no emphasis at all on analytics or geoprocessing, that's not in there. But load the data up to the cloud, somehow put it together, hit publish, and have people look at it is what's out there.
And in this particular economic climate, and I continue to hear bad news at the state and local level, this may be a very good alternative. And again, we don't know pricing at this point, but I assume it's going to be fairly modest, and they want people to use it. That's my feeling I got from talking to Dylan when he introduced it to me.
Yeah, that's my sense too, and I don't think anybody's really worried that it's going to be super expensive. And the other key point is that it will not be available until Q3 of this year.
Q3, right.
Which is interesting, because normally when Google announces certainly a cloud or a web solution, they announce it when you can start playing with it. I think it was interesting, and this was pointed out on our blog, that they didn't do that. They announced it, and there's really nothing to look at.
Right. And isn't it funny that, as we're going to talk about the Microsoft situation, they didn't give you anything to really use either. So two companies, I don't know, maybe jumping the gun at some of their announcements.
Right. We'll get to the Microsoft announcement in a minute. But I think it's worth noting that Google did trot out two of its first users. And one of them was the electric company in Queensland, Australia, called Ergon. And there was a very detailed article with some really interesting quotes from the chief executive, Ian McLeod. And he made statements like, Google Earth Builder has the potential in the future to replace GIS. And he made statements about how much money they were going to save, tens of millions of dollars.
Hmm.
And he made some just wacky statements. It's giving us a 3D model that's captured in real time. So it's a much richer environment, which we can use to make better decisions. Well, the better decisions thing, sure, yes, any kind of visualization of data. But the real-time part, I didn't understand that from the demos that we saw, but
no.
Maybe that's in there somewhere. And then he went on to say, often businesses have to do data cleansing exercises, and they in themselves cost millions of dollars. This process will be directly from the point of data capture straight up into the system with virtually little human intervention in between. And he's referring to, they have decided to fly an area in Queensland that they're going to load up into Google Earth Builder. And I don't understand how that's going to go any faster using this kind of a system than it would using currently available image processing tools that we might use. Did you understand that?
No, I think he's overstated the problem, or he's gotten some bad information, either one. I think it's a bit of hyperbole at this point, and maybe he's hoping for the best. But the data collection, the data management, the data smoothing, whatever you want to do to the data is still going to be a tedious process.
Right, and I don't think Google has any...
There's no magic there.
Significantly different tools than the ones that we know of well and have known of for some time.
Right, exactly.
I mean, maybe the difference is that you do the crunching in the cloud and it's more powerful so it goes faster, but the actual algorithms and such I don't think are that different.
Yeah, some of those things may be coming from Google, and they've been alluded to. I don't see that with this product at this point.
In this particular iteration.
Correct.
And the other client that Google references is the NGA, which pretty much says nothing about their use.
Right.
I'll quote, "Behind the scenes, Google Earth Builder will host and serve NGA geospatial content to its mission partners and customers, equipping them with timely information using the user's tool of choice. NGA will have the ability to use the vast number of cloud resources for rapid processing of the ever-growing quantities of geospatial data and then provide the GeoInt in an online, on-demand environment." Right, which is basically, oh, they're going to use it. Okay. Got it.
And they've been using Google Earth Enterprise for several years. Google Builder, Earth Builder, just another tool.
Right, and actually that's the same thing with Ergon, which interestingly is also a user of Small World GIS and AutoCAD MapGuide, I learned digging around. But I'm not convinced at all that Google Earth Builder is going to replace the design tools and environment of, say, a Small World. At least not right now.
Yeah, not right now. Yep.
Now, the other question I want to get to before we jump to Microsoft is, what is it that Google Earth Builder is actually competing with in the marketplace?
You know, that's a harder problem to ask. I never got the impression that they put this out there to compete with anybody in particular. My feeling is Google is doing things to leverage what Google has already developed. And I want to get into this more when we talk about Microsoft, but they have tools that they're trying to productize and capitalize. This is just what they've got, and I think they thought of a different way to offer the tools that they've got on the back end to more people. As I said again in the blog, it's a little bit clunky in the way they've got the workflow between Builder and Maps API and Google Earth Enterprise. It's all coming together. But it isn't something that I thought that had any product roadmap. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't know if they did it with any competitive moves in mind. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. What's your take?
That actually sounds like a really valid explanation of this sort of appearing, because it's not new technology. It's just new that it's being offered as a service in the cloud. They have already been using it.
Sure.
So that's a really good point. Now, I think what's sort of driving a lot of energy within the geospatial community is looking at it from the geospatial community's use of existing tools like ArcGIS Online and WeoGeo and GIS Cloud, or even some of the data as a service offerings from Pitney Bowes, Business Insights.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that there are sort of pieces of cloud out there that do some of these kinds of things, and I would argue this even has some of the feelings of some of the, and this was years ago when Microsoft and Google said, hey, you've got a lot of imagery of your county, of your state, give it to us. We'll host it for you as part of our existing offerings, right? And that was very exciting because that was a highly stressful, very expensive thing for counties or states to do.
Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm.
And here's the other one. This also could potentially compete with ESRI's Community Maps program. Because if you don't want to make your data publicly available through that program, this is a way for you to control access to it, but have it published out in a cloud in a very standard sort of way that people can access. So it really is sort of bumping into a bunch of other things, and I have a feeling you may be right that this was not intentional. It just sort of fell at this moment.
Yeah, because everybody is talking about some solution like this in some way.
Right, or solving some part of this problem.
Yeah.
So, for example, WeoGeo is all about finding your data and building up that metadata catalog so that you can find and use and share and sell what it is you have. But that's sort of only one piece of it.
Yeah,
right.
But that was kind of a big piece of Google Earth Builder that they were trying to hype, was the metadata catalog that you could build.
Certainly the demo seemed to suggest it, because we sure spent a lot of time looking at it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to Microsoft's announcement, which did not cause quite the excitement, I think, in the geospatial community this week. And I'm not sure why, and I'm not sure if it maybe should have. Now, the strangely named Read-Write World seems to be about organizing the world's media, the world's data, that has that geographic tag to it, which sounds so much like a Google thing, doesn't it? Organizing the world's data.
Well, but it also sounds so much like Flickr. That was my first impression. Hey, isn't this Flickr?
Well, and it sort of is, except sort of expanded to look at various kinds of media, from video to sound, to ultimately, I think, to documents and other things that are tagged geographically. They've announced their own markup language for this called RML, Reality Markup Language. There's open source code to put this environment onto different platforms, and Microsoft is being very careful about encouraging people to share their media via a Creative Commons kind of license, but also wants to be able to deal with data that is formally copywritten. So the idea is really to organize all that stuff that's out there on the web and make it accessible through some kind of geographically oriented interface. And they showed some demonstration viewers of how you can move through the map and have things sort of pop up. And what's particularly interesting, I think, is that this content would be re-indexed in real time. So if you add something right at this moment, a tweet or a post on Facebook, it could be up there and accessible to people immediately. And how are they doing that? The back end is a NoSQL database.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So there are pieces of this that are very exciting, but a lot of it sounds like, oh, okay, putting Twitter streams up on a map and putting Facebook posts up on a map. We've sort of seen that. So what was your reaction to Microsoft's announcement?
Well, I think at the heart of this was that they wanted people to be witnesses to near real-time drama. And from a media perspective, we want the real picture of what's happening on the scene in real time. We've discussed this before. Eventually, there'll be near real-time satellite imagery looking down on downtown Misrata, in this case, or Tripoli. We want to see what's going on. We don't want the static picture of the situation. This kind of felt like the platform that they're offering to do this. And Ablaze, in his video, and it's a good video, it's worth watching to see his explanation, because of the emphasis they're putting, first of all, on Creative Commons, which you mentioned. I thought that was interesting in and of itself, what they're trying to do with coalescing all of this media and giving you control over it. But the problem here that they're trying to solve it is this immersive experience, and it's not necessarily, I think, truly applicable to GIS folks. I thought it was more gauged towards kind of either mainstream media or something like that. It wasn't clear. It's a little bit fuzzy for me.
I had that same experience, and maybe one way to think about it is it's sort of like the ESRI disaster maps that have all the different feeds coming into them, and you go there as sort of a central portal to all of this data. And the big difference here is that potentially this would cover a broader swath of anything on the web that was tagged using this new markup language would magically appear. So it's sort of like those kind of maps, but on steroids. I know we hate that expression, but that's what that was the feeling I got, and I was trying to imagine what that might look like if you were covering, say, what's going on in some of the issues in the Middle East, or the Texas wildfires, or the tornado that hit St. Louis.
Right, right. Blaise said something very interesting that kind of the light bulb went on for me a little bit. He says they were traversing the where graph. I thought it was a nicely cogent phrase to slip in there as he was explaining the technology, because, again, you'd have to visualize the video, but it's this panoramic view along a street, and as he traverses the street, again, images pop up, and this concept to me of this where graph kind of stuck in my head a little bit.
Microsoft is very careful to put out these projects that are really sort of technology preview snapshots. There's not really anything to play with yet, although it sounds like there will be soon. And one of the things that's part of this whole is some of the tools that come from PhotoSynth and some of the other Microsoft projects, which allow them to take photographs and locate them based on what is seen from other photographs.
Yeah.
So that in a sense, you're building up this photographic version of the world. And that has some really interesting implications. And it was actually Mike Leibold who talked about this on a video, where we're getting to a point where if you have a big enough database and you pick up your camera in your phone and you look through it and snap a quick picture, it can go to that database and tell you where you are.
Where you are, right.
Which is a whole another way to determine where you are. So if Microsoft, part of Microsoft's goal is to build that database, even if it doesn't own it and part of it's owned under Creative Commons by other people, it's starting to build one of those Intel Inside databases that Tim O'Reilly talks about, that if you can't own the data, and if you can't own the data, own the organization of the data, well, maybe they're going after that organization of the data thing.
And that may be true, but what I perceived happening in Blaze's explanation was it's very similar to what we just discussed kind of with Google, which is they have all these tools and they have all these platforms. And he even showed, Blaze showed this chart of all of these Microsoft tools, the PhotoSynth, the map editing capabilities. And then he tried to map them to existing products. What are we doing in Silver Lake, or what are we exposing in Silver Lake? And I got the feeling, once again, they've got lots of tools and trying to figure out what to do with them, how to productize them. And this was one of those things that they said, let's throw it up against a wall, see if it sticks.
And that's very interesting, and I think very different than what goes on in a company like Pitney Bowes Business Insights or ESRI.
Well, they have the freedom to do that, because they have a lot of people that can sit in a room and think about these types of applications. It's not that way in a Pitney Bowes.
Right, or even an ESRI, where there are all these longtime customers poking for the next thing and identifying perhaps even more clearly than the customers of Microsoft and Google's at what they want next. And if you do watch the ESRI keynote from Where 2.0, it talks about the cloud strategy and speaks to a hosted solution for data coming summer 2011. So ESRI is going to have something in a space, something like this, coming for its user base.
Adina, does it feel to you that we are in a geospatial bubble of technology? We have all of these tools coming out there. It seems like there's too many of them for any one individual to process. Even the companies that are releasing these tools themselves are having difficulty finding a place. Again, the old tool in search of a problem, and it just gives me this impression that we've got so much out there that if I was out there trying to create a solution to my enterprise problem, which is what we cover at Directions, I would have a real problem. There's tools that just don't seem to fit but look cool. Do you get that impression?
Yeah, there's definitely some of that going on. But I'm gonna put my money on the ESRIs and the Pitney Bowes and the Intergraphs of the world, who have that long-standing relationship and have been growing along with their user bases as the technology changes. And all of those are very conservative companies. The Googles and the Microsofts are out there taking the chances, falling on their faces. And that tends to happen less at these more conservative companies because they see what works first. Now, having said all that, their customers tend to be ESRIs and MapInfos and Intergraphs customers have to be conservative because they're governments and giant utilities that can't go down tomorrow. So it's an interesting time. And to just circle back on your comment about, we're looking for that killer app. We're looking for it. We have all these technologies and layers of data and tools and locating algorithms. And remember the big hoopla? This was, 6 weeks ago, where Color was announced? Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it took advantage of the fact that your phone could take a picture and it knew where the picture was, and you could share the picture with people around you, and it got everybody creeped out and you didn't hear from it again. Right? So that was a perfect example of a solution in search of a problem that I continue to predict will go nowhere. Well, that's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can leave a comment at Directions Magazine, where this podcast is hosted.
And we hope you'll take advantage of a few of our upcoming webinars. We've got one this week on the integration of geospatial technology and business intelligence. We have some very interesting Directions On Points upcoming in May. Matt O'Connell from GOI will be our guest on May the 3rd. And Vanessa Lawrence, the Director General of the Ordnance Survey, will be our guest on May 17th. I hope you'll join us. More information at directionsmag.com/webinars.
Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.